Welcome to Torah Smash, the podcast for nerdy Jews, where our lives of Jewish learning collide with our love of nerd culture. In each episode, we discuss what we lovingly call a Torah Smash, which we have defined as a beautiful collision of one thing from the world of Judaism with another from nerd culture. I'm Ethan Lane Miller, and joining me today are
Barak Malkin,
RDY,
Danny Fingeroth.
Woo!
Yeah!
Our guest for today's episode is Danny Fingeroth.
Excited.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Calm down. You're always disappointed.
Danny Fingeroth was a longtime writer and editor at Marvel Comics, where he ran the Spider-Man comics line and wrote comics including Darkhawk and Deadly Foes of Spider-Man. Danny is a recipient of the Inkpot Award for Lifetime Achievement in Comics from the San Diego Comic-Con. He's involved in various aspects of the Jewish comics experience, also known by the acronym JUICE, which is a convention coming up on November 12th in New York City. Danny is the author of numerous books, including Disguised as Clark Kent, Jews, Comics, and the Creation of the Superhero, A Marvelous Life, The Amazing Story of Stan Lee, as well as Jack Ruby, The Many Faces of Oswald's Assassin, which will be coming in November from Chicago Review Press in time for the 60th anniversary of the murders of John F. Kennedy and Lee Harvey Oswald. Danny, welcome to Torah Smash.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey, welcome.
Great to be here. So, you know, when I heard the name Torah Smash, I tried to figure out what is the origin, and to me it sounded like Hulk Smash. Is that okay?
Yeah, part of it came from that, absolutely. Yeah. And the other of this, like, the collision of these two worlds coming together. Yeah.
Okay.
So on the topic and on the idea of this collision, I want to begin to set this collision in motion. And we are going to be talking a bit about Across the Spider-Verse, the animated Spider-Man film that just recently came on out. My friends and Danny, thank you for joining us. Tell me, when did you go see Spider-Verse? How was it?
I thought it was pretty good. I saw it almost right after it came out.
I think I saw it the Thursday night before it officially came out with my wife and daughter. My daughter loves to draw characters from Into and Across the Spider-Verse, and she just went nuts over both movies, as did I.
Yeah, I think I saw it about a week after it came out. You know, Marvel pre-COVID would have special preview screenings for people in New York and LA. And I think they still do them in LA, you know, with the fancy schmancy red carpet stuff. But the ones in New York, they have not resumed. So I paid my whatever the movie's in New York course now and went to see it.
Very fun.
I saw it, I think it was a couple weeks after it came out. And so I had missed the showing at my favorite movie theater, Alamo Drafthouse. It's like a much fancier studio movie grill, if that means anything here. So it was
movie grill. It's like a restaurant inside.
Yeah. So Alamo Drafthouse, like, you get there, there's a waiter, you get to eat and drink as the movie's going on. It's a great experience.
It's the restaurant where everybody faces the movie.
It's phenomenal.
It sounds like a great idea that could go horribly wrong if the movie's like meh.
I've been to dine-in theaters, but to call it a grill, like, I think elevates what I've experienced in terms of dine-in theaters.
Well, I will speak for Alamo Drafthouse and say it's great.
Oh, good.
All right, we're visiting Austin.
I would love to have you.
So where are you guys? Ethan, you're in Austin?
Yes.
I'm in Jersey.
Jersey. And David, you're in?
Chicago.
You're in Chicago. Okay, all right. So yeah, the whole country is...
He was in California. He just moved last month to Chicago. Yeah.
Let me tell you, scheduling the podcast.
Do you know Hillel Silverman or Phil Grobart? Do you know those guys?
I know the name Hillel Silverman.
Well, Hillel Silverman was Jack Ruby's rabbi. He just died a couple of months ago in 1999. He's the father of the actor Jonathan Silverman. I interviewed him for my Jack Ruby book, and he sent me his notes from when he visited Ruby in prison with like the rusty clips from 60 years ago. That was pretty intense.
Wow, that's very cool.
Wow.
I just pre-ordered the book, by the way, while we were talking.
Well, you're the second person to tell me that, so I've made at least like...
You've got two readers.
Yeah. Okay, well, it starts with two.
Excellent.
So Spider-Verse, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. This is what everything is. It's just a lot of tangents and it's just conversation.
Yeah. So it's an exercise in editing it.
Yes. It's fine.
Artie Wine are very good at helping to give Barack editing experience.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me drop a name. The first of many. I'm a horrible name. Actually, I'm a very good name dropper. So I was just speaking to Al Milgram today. And Al is the creator of The Spot, who turns out to be
the major part. What a surprising main villain for Across the Spider-Verse.
I love that.
Yeah, this is amazing that no idea, no matter how casual or this is like this villain. I don't think Al thought it was going to be, he thought it was a fun idea and a name. And of course, his name was Jonathan On, as in Johnny on the Spot.
That's fun.
Civilian name.
That's great.
But yeah, I don't think anybody thought that 40 years later they'd be, it would be like a major part.
A lot of the superhero franchises are doing that. They're taking these characters that are joke characters that in previous iterations have like meant nothing or were for slapstick purposes. And the beginning of this movie highlighted that, where he's miserably failing to rob this ATM machine,
right,
falling through his own portals and reaching out into ATM traffic. Machine. I did, just like they did in the movie too, didn't they?
Yes.
With his PIN number and everything. And so like they highlighted that, and I thought that's where they were going. And then he became this mass. It was wonderful. I thought they did a great job with it, tying it all together.
Those movies, it's amazing that, I was just saying today, they had to really wait for a couple of generations of Hollywood producers to like retire and die so that people could come in who actually took the material seriously enough, I mean, now it may be the opposite direction. Maybe they almost take it too seriously, but to get people in who would take it seriously at all really took a whole, my favorite thing about that is the classic meeting with, I think Stan had it and probably other people with Hollywood producers. They'd be talking about a Spider-Man movie and someone would say, does it have to be a spider?
Well, so, right. This was the character that Stanley got laughed out of offices over and over again to try to pitch Spider-Man, of that you can't have teenagers like aren't superheroes and they're just sidekicks sort of thing. So the fact that the Spot became the villain of somebody that we're all laughing at, I think, is that a little apropos. Yeah.
No, that there are children now playing with Spot toys, right?
I think that's also something that's very much in the Marvel method of storytelling, is that the little guy is just as much a big deal as the main character,
right.
Whoever it is.
Yeah.
And then I think that's what, I am a fan of both Marvel and DC and Dark Horse and yet something about the Marvel universe always kind of draws me to it. And I think it's that idea of the normal. And yes, even though they're super, they're dealing with the same things I'm dealing with. And that idea that even this person that you pass on the street and you might not pay attention to who they are, they have a whole story.
Everybody, right. Everybody is the hero of their own movie. The first person I heard quoted on that was Jack Kerouac, be the hero of your own movie, we are. I mean, that's a key to writing and to writing anything, right? Fiction or biography or the idea that everybody is the most important person in their story. Yeah, you can't forget that.
I love this because I can easily imagine us all four seeing this movie together, walking out of the theater, or perhaps being escorted out of the theater because we're still sitting there trying to talk about everything and really dive into it. But, we all saw it separately on our own in our own theaters. But did you know that while all of us saw Across the Spider-Verse, it is possible that not all of us watched the same movie?
No. I think I know where you're... Is this part of the Smash lead-in?
It might be, Barack. It just might. So some fans noticed after the movie, and Kotaku.com kind of grabbed a lot of these observations together and saw that there were at least two versions of Across the Spider-Verse that were released in theaters. So according to the article, there are some lines in certain scenes that are added or removed or altered. So some things, like, for example, and this is from the Kotaku article, After falling through one of the Spot's spots at the beginning of the film, Miles's dad, Jefferson Davis, will either groan and look around or will get a snappy reaction shot of his face. Some versions have Miles hearing about Hobie Brown, Spider-Punk, for the first time, don't include a little line of text of Miles saying his name out loud above his head. Some cuts don't have Miguel saying that's funny when Gwen Stacy tries to explain why she's with Miles. And the Spot will either say, oh, what the heck, or which would not be good in the scene where he puts his finger on the mini collider.
Is this real?
Wait a second. Yeah. Is this like country by country or is it random?
So I did a little bit of research on this.
Good.
And first off, it is confirmed. The associate editor, Andy Levitin, confirmed that there are different versions of the films that were out in circulation and posted on one of his social media accounts. I was wondering when people might start noticing. That's not in the Kotaku article, but others have said that they think it had to do with the American version versus the international version and right. which showing
and
was
that makes sense.
Yeah. And which was
those differences don't sound like they would be offensive to other cultures or something, or not understood by other cultures. It's odd, you know, those are odd little differences.
Mm-hmm. So listeners, if you have or were able to find a more official reason for this, please write on in and let me know. But there were, at least as far as we know, two versions of this movie. And perhaps we saw different versions of the same movie.
Like Clue.
Yeah, but that's more blatant. That was way more blatant.
So what is the Jewish connection I'm trying to pull from this? And RDY's eyes just got a little bit wide, listeners.
Yeah, I was hoping for a little more lead-in.
Oh, it's an Ethan episode. You're not getting more lead-in.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so we're focusing purely on the fact that there's two different versions?
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
Is this the idea that, like, I am fully aware of what Judaism means to me based on the one rabbi I've ever learned from?
Ooh, interesting, but not where I was going.
That there are two different versions of the creation in Genesis?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Danny Fingeroth for the win, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. Hole in one right there. That's great.
That was incredible. Oh, yeah.
I didn't.
No.
No, that's exactly what we want. Good job.
No, that was... hole in one is golf, bro.
I think I kind of know that mostly from Homer Simpson, you know?
Really?
I think when Homer says, I believe everything in the Bible, including the parts that contradict the other parts.
Oh, that's very funny.
So, Danny, you're right on. There are actually two creation stories at least. So, RDY, please tell us.
Well, the two that I would guess that you're talking about are chapters 1 and 2 of Genesis.
Correct.
Okay, so in the first chapter of Genesis, God goes through and systematically creates 6 days worth of creation. And then in the second chapter, we get when God began to create heaven and earth again. So it's this like, wait a second, didn't we just read that in the last episode? So there's this other creation narrative. And then there's, of course, the story of Noah and the ark, where the world gets created again, but washed out with water. So we'll leave that one alone.
Oh, that's really interesting. I wasn't even thinking of pulling in Noah and the Ark. So that's potentially a third creation story.
That might really be an editing issue with the book, you know?
There are so many editing issues with this book.
So that leads to a very interesting question of what's the real story?
Yes. Oh.
I think the difference here is that, well, maybe not. The two Genesis stories have... I can't find the difference because I was going to say if I saw either version, I don't know if it would have affected my overall outcome of the storytelling for the movie. But I also don't know if the two different versions of Genesis of like running through the days and then going back and learning about the Garden of Eden, I don't think that affects my understanding of it either. If I were to get one or the other, I guess there is the difference. We get both of them in Genesis, whereas we're apparently only getting one of them in the theater.
So one is the director's cut.
Ooh, yeah. The director's cut is like very, it's all the Midrashim and commentary added in. And apparently in slow motion unnecessarily.
But then you have the director's cut of Touch of Evil, where they take the credits off that great opening sequence of the bomb in the car. You know, so sometimes the director's cut is an improvement.
That's true.
Yeah. So what do we do? How do we reconcile it when these two versions of the story, be it the director's cut or Genesis chapter one, Genesis chapter two, don't necessarily fit together super well in a puzzle piece? And sometimes there are contradictory texts, in this case, in the exact same book.
You're hitting a point of passion for me, Ethan. And I would like to say right from the top that if a person believes that this stuff actually happened, maybe they don't understand the text.
That, are you telling me that Spider-Man's not real? Is that what you're saying?
No, not not Spider-Man's real. I mean, the people with Genesis.
Good. My whole life was about to crumble. You
know, the Torah, the Bible, is a story written by people, redacted over time, and edited and altered and told orally, so we change details. You know, think of any story you've told over and over and how it's changed in your lifetime. Well, the Bible's thousands of years old, so all the more so. And so there's this, like, we highlight the things that make us feel best, or perhaps we highlight the things that confirm our biases, and we use the portions of the text that give us the most meaning to our lives. And that stuff that doesn't fit, we go, well, meh. And then some people, maybe not who are quite the larger part of our dozens of listeners, would say that there was even a whole New Testament that, you know, okay, forget the other stuff. Wait, we're still going to keep the stuff that allows for slavery and bigotry and racism, but we're going to eat pork now. So, like, we all choose which version of the story we want.
So it's sort of the retconning of the Bible. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
We all do.
So it's also not just the creation story. I was asking around for trying to get some other examples of things that are kind of duplicated in the Torah. And so, Arduai, you brought up the, I guess, third creation story of the flood. And someone, when I was doing my research, also brought up that the Ten Commandments are listed in the Torah twice.
There's a one-word difference in the two tellings.
Ooh, and what's the word?
The word not is deleted from all the commandments.
One word multiple times.
I mean, you bring up a really fascinating point, because this is an oral tradition of passing down stories. We tell these stories orally. And the word for no in Hebrew is lo, spelled lamed aleph. If we spell that word lo, lamed vav, it does not mean no anymore. It means for him. This will take us down a rabbit hole of what does it mean then? Thou shalt murder for him? But
I don't like that.
But it's not spelled that way, though. It's spelled Lamed Aleph.
But it's from an oral tradition. So,
oh, I see. Oh.
Lo tirtzach should, it really should mean don't murder. And I hope you believe it means don't murder, but it could.
Is well,
it
some of them.
The lo or al in the.
In this case, it's lo. Yeah, it's lo tirtzach. Yeah, al tirtzach is like, don't stop doing it right now. And lo tirtzach is don't ever do it. And tirtzach is murder, is the example I'm choosing for.
So if I know Torah and I know rabbis and I know commentary, I'm sure not a lot of people have talked about the differences between those two listings of the Ten Commandments and the one word difference and what that means, right, RDY?
Sarcasm is one, like a second language to me, so
I hear I can tell you, pulling in my own personal fandoms, thinking about Star Trek and Star Wars, when there are prequels or retcons or possibilities, there's definitely never ever commentary and discussions and what does this mean? So it's fascinating, the discussion of what is real, what really happened in this. In this case, thinking about Spider-Man or Star Trek or Star Wars, this fictional universe, and RDY, your perspective of, you know,
not just to promote my book, but
please,
I've gone down 1,000 rabbit holes with the Kennedy assassination with this Jack Ruby book. I mean, that's every theory about the Kennedy assassination, which, you know, the people who have those theories don't call them theories; they call them every true, you know, unalterable narrative is just filled with possibilities that are taken to be true and, you know, assumptions that are taken as gospel, if you'll pardon the expression. And because in the book, I don't pretend that I'm going to solve the mysteries of the Kennedy assassination. Mm-hmm. You know, smarter people than me have tried. You know, I just try to paint a picture of this really strange, for better or worse, Jewish guy, Jack Ruby. And, you know, the things that people have said to me personally or that I've read or, you know, you see on documentaries where this definitely happened this way. How do you know? Well, I just know. Well, you don't really know. You're sort of taking it as an article of faith that, you know, that this person was at that place. I mean, it is fascinating. And that's why most studies of Jack Ruby have been fictionalized over the years, because he's such a complicated and frustrating character to try to explain. But I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, and I think to get up in the morning, there's a lot of things you have to take for granted, even though you don't know how they work. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't really know how the subway works. And a lot of the times it doesn't, but most of the time it gets me where I'm going. You know, I mean, that, you know, I'm actually reading. I'll do one more tangent. I'm reading a book by Douglas Rushkoff, whose name you might know as a futurist and philosopher with a Jewish edge. My MBLX podcast is a great interview with him. And Rushkoff is just talking about his sort of his meetings with billionaires, with multi-billionaires who wanted to meet with him just to know how to avoid the apocalypse. You know, how they will survive when the entire rest of the world is scrambling for survival and global warming and nuclear holocaust. And really, it's all about these people's fantasies, because, of course, they won't survive. You know, they may last a week or two longer than everybody else. But, you know, Rushkoff just plays with that idea of consensus reality and how we handle it as humans.
I was going to say, I think part of this altered stories goes into the realities that we know, because Ethan, if you did not mention this, you and I would have been living two different lives, be in two different worlds of like, you knew about the existence of these multiple stories and I did not. So just on that alone, we were already divergent.
Well, not just that, I had to keep that secret from you till we recorded.
Right. And so even just at the basis of knowing that there's two Genesis stories or two Spider-Verse stories or multiple Jack Kirby stories, that would have been a very different history. Just having that knowledge sets you on a very different perspective than others around you. And so I think just understanding or knowledge or having that openness to hear that is a starting point. And then you can get to like, oh, now we have these different stories. Let's figure out the differences or where they align.
I mean, I think Star Wars is a great place to explore that too, where
of course it is.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. George Lucas famously tinkers with his stuff for years after it's come out.
Years. Han shot first, Greedo shot first.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Last night, we were. Where were we? We were at a baseball game, which is why I had no idea where I was.
A sports ball game.
We were at a sports ball game, and it just so happened to be Star Wars night at Wrigley Field. And they had this whole Han Solo montage.
Pick your jaw up, Ethan. Pick your jaw up. Yeah.
And
we're going to have to talk later.
And one of the things it said was Han shot first. And I started wooing. But I'm surrounded by sports ball people. So I just got stared at.
It was a great game. The Cubs beat up on the first place Cincinnati Reds. It was fantastic.
So much as a travesty of errors. But
okay. My father is from Skokie, so I have been blessed and cursed with being a longtime Cubs fan.
I'm going to have to stop this sports ball conversation and swing us back. This is way too far out.
The holy city of Cincinnati. I'm born and raised.
I usually have my questions of clarity for RDY, but Danny, I'm going to ask you one because we talked about these differences in the Torah of these stories that have shifted or we have this different understanding. And I think the memories I have are when things happen have happened in the Marvel universe, usually they make a change and then it shifts from there, right? The thing that I'm thinking of is I know that the Hulk was originally gray and they turned him green for the printing purpose, but he was gray for a few issues and then he was green
gray for one issue,
right? So There, I knew there was like a, so that's like a, this different story. There's a Gray Hulk situation out there somewhere. Right. And then, but never again, right? He has
9 years later, they brought the Gray Hulk back.
Oh, okay.
Story point. Yeah.
So are there other Marvel pieces that you know of where there were slight alterations to these like Genesis stories of these characters or storylines that people may have, you know, perceived something slightly different based on when they read the story?
Wow. Probably, yeah. I mean, there certainly are across my mind. Well, you know, when the Fantastic Four origin, mm-hmm. it's the whole Marvel timeline always moves up to, you
know, right.
As far as I know, it's always the Fantastic Four flight to space was always 10 years ago, from what 10 years previous to whatever the current. So,
point.
Would mean that it happened in, you know, 2013, which is ridiculous, but that's sort of. You know, so
yeah,
most you can stretch it back is what, maybe 2009 or something.
That's a great point.
So it's that constant thing. I mean, it was originally it was to beat the commies to space. Then it became just to go to the stars, you know, in a more abstract way. You know, and although, you know, Marvel of the 40s and 50s did take place in New York, the first couple of Fantastic Four stories, maybe just the first, takes place in some place called Central City. You know, which they then later said was Stockton, California, for some reason. I'm not mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, they're always playing around with stuff like that.
Okay.
Well, and then there's a lot of different Captain America origins, where at first he was injected, but then I think in the 60s, they thought that was the injection would be rejected by the comics code. So they made him, he drinks a potion, and then later on, it became both an injection and it's all there's stuff, you know, there are more significant things than that that I'm probably, well, just the idea of making Magneto, you know, a Holocaust survivor, and then making, you know, it took years for them to say conclusively that he was Jewish at all, you know, because they didn't want a genocidal horrific villain to necessarily be identified as specifically Jewish.
Yeah. I love that you brought that up, because I wanted to ask, one of the things that Spider-Verse talks about is a canon event. The idea that there's certain things that are just canon to who Spider-Man is. And something I've been wondering and thinking about is, you know, the Holocaust tie-in to Magneto is, in my mind, such an important part of the character. And as we look to Marvel and the MCU potentially bringing in the X-Men and mutants into things, as the Holocaust fades from memory, what is Magneto's canon event? At what point do we have to consider updating or revising his backstory to make it fit with the 2020s?
Right.
Wow. Well, as you may recall, Magneto was reverted to infancy in an issue in the 70s, or maybe even the 60s, you know.
Oh.
At one point, he and the, so kind of his age is, and, you know, Nick Fury takes that infinity formula. But I mean, I think it's a great question, because the Marvel Universe, even more so than the DC Universe, the Marvel Universe is really predicated on World War II. You know, it's so much of that. You can fudge the Fantastic Four's origin to not be connected to the Cold War necessarily, but so much of the Red Skull and Captain America and all those foundational myths are, and Nick Fury, are tied to World War II. I just don't know how you ever, you know, I don't know why you would want to, but to divorce it from that seems like it's losing the souls of the character in some way. And
yeah,
it becomes untenable.
I think that was one of the reasons why I didn't like Indiana Jones Temple of Doom so much, is because there weren't Nazi villains in that one, right? Is that all of his other movies deal with World War II and Nazis, and that one he's completely separated from that area, and so not a concern, and definitely, except for Crystal Skull, like by far not the best of the Indiana Jones movies because of his tie to the Nazis.
I don't know that I agree with you on that one. I think the reason that's not this good movie is because it has singing in it.
Okay.
So I still want to call the question, so to say, and, you know, what is a canon event? How much can we tweak things before it truly changes the person and who they are? So Uncle Ben dies. And that supposedly, according to the Spider-Verse, is supposed to happen for every iteration of Spider-Man. But how that Uncle Ben character, that archetype, dies is very different in each telling. At what point does it change to the point that it's no longer the same story?
I think it's more about the impact that it has. Right? Uncle Ben, Aunt May, Uncle Aaron, right? Not the same names, same impact, same connection that the character has to that person when they pass away, as opposed to the uncle they haven't seen for 10 years, right? We haven't seen an Uncle Ben in the MCU. Maybe we'll get a different storyline for him if he comes back or not. We saw a suitcase with his initials in the first one, but who's to say they just got divorced and he's not living with them, and therefore Aunt May took on that role of this close relative. I think it has to do with the heart connection, right? Marvel has a lot of things that have to do with love and emotions. And so I think that's what ties the canon. It's not the names, it's the impact and the relationship to that person.
So World War II is the Marvel, you know, Marvel's canon event, mm-hmm. to mix worlds.
I think so. In every one of those alternate Spider-Verses, does Uncle Ben die because of something Peter didn't do or did do?
Oh, that's a great question.
Or tried to do but couldn't.
Yeah.
And then isn't for Ghost Spider, isn't it Peter Parker who dies for because of something that Gwen Stacy couldn't do? Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think you're right. Well, it's that feeling. Well, I guess I think of it as a Jewish feeling, but probably everybody feels it as that you could have done just a little bit more, you know, that if you only just exerted that, go on that extra, you know, inch, that extra mile, you know. So I think that maybe even without Uncle Ben, one would like to think that Peter Parker's strength of character and the fact of him just being human meant that he would have had some other lesson, maybe one not as dramatic, but maybe one more dramatic. Maybe he would have done something selfish and 100 people would have died, you know.
So Jewish guilt is the driving factor.
Well, no, but you know, look, neither Ditko nor Romita were Jewish, so I can't really, mm-hmm. you know, so you have to kind of include some Catholic guilt there, too, you know.
Right.
Seems to be, you know, a universal thing, although Jews may have our own brand of it, I guess. There's a great line in the movie The Killers with the original one from the 40s with Burt Lancaster.
Mm-hmm.
And a little spoiler alert here. It's from a movie.
If you haven't seen it the last 80 years.
You know, the movie opens. I mean, the movie opens up with a couple of hired killers. One is William Conrad, who played Cannon. They find the Burt Lancaster character and they shoot him. But he's not quite dead. And somebody, you know, but he's dying. And another character comes in and says, "Why did they shoot you? What happened?" And he says, "I did something wrong once."
Oh, that's crazy.
Is that good. What Johnny Dangerously is spoofing?
Oh, what is John? I love that movie. Which part?
When the bad guy says, like, anytime anyone does something to me, he says, "Never, you know, never smack me. My mother smacked me once.
Oh, maybe, you know.
Oh, that's very funny.
So there was a book about a year or so ago, give or take, by Robert Leahy, I think is his name. It's one of those L-E-A-H-Y, so never sure how to pronounce those, about regret and how regret can actually be a positive thing. And please forgive me if anyone is more familiar with the book than I am. But this idea that it can be a driver to do things better than we did before. And I think the way he phrases it is that when someone tells you what they regret, they're telling you who they are. They're telling you what's important to them. Mm. And so that idea of not being able to save a loved one and turning that into saving as many people as they can, that's what makes that a canon event, I would say, for all of the spiders out there.
And for Batman, of course, that's his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I was actually talking to my son today about Batman and the Joker, and we were talking about good villains, and he brought up the Joker. And I said that Batman and the Joker are the same, except that one of them turns their psychosis to good and one turns it to evil.
Well, I was just, I mean, I didn't make this up, but I was saying it on a Spider-Verse panel in San Diego last week, that what makes a hero, right? The hero origins and the villain's origins are the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One terrible thing happens to them, and here's their response. Well, what makes the superhero, right, or the hero, is that they decide that they're never going to let anything bad happen to anybody again. The villain's response is they're going to spend the rest of their life getting payback on everybody, you know, on everybody. But the origins are the same for heroes and villains.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I want to, while we're on the Spider-Verse topic, with that idea in mind, the end of this movie was I loved the twist that he's now was Universe 42. Is it 42? Yeah. Oh, 42, because I believe they named it after Jackie Robinson, is my guess.
I was thinking Douglas Adams.
Oh, maybe. But they go back and he's in this universe where there's no Spider-Man. And the, you know, now his Miles Morales Prowler is on the offensive, I believe. And it leads you to think that he is now like head of a gang, head of this, like he's got some bad angle to him. Here's a different perspective, just like you were talking about, Danny, is that I think the Miles Morales Prowler is a good Prowler. That even because he wasn't bit by Spider-Man, and Uncle Aaron's not gone, but his dad has passed away, and so maybe that was his triggering mm-hmm. moment, is that in the third movie, in Beyond the Spider-Verse, whenever we end up getting it, that Prowler that we met is actually trying to protect his city, and this new person with powers has shown up, just like I'm sure lots of other people have been destroying the city, and he is doing this as a way to protect his New York. And that I think he's a good Prowler and not an evil Prowler. Just this is the way his universe looks, that he's got these powers in this direction.
Want to bet?
Yeah, I would love to mark it right now. listeners, if he turns out to be good, I want you to share this out with all your friends.
Yeah, the name is problematic. It's unlikely like a good guy would call himself the Prowler, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't, has he called himself the Prowler?
We don't know.
Right?
Don't.
He hasn't called himself the Prowler. True. But I would say, right, if Batman used to say that he was doing that to scare villains. The bat was a scary thing, right? And so spiders aren't a gentle thing. That's spiders true. Aren't thing that people are wanting to, he's not like the Catman or something. Right. And so even these named the Prowler, I think he could
biases.
Yeah, right. These right, all these biases.
I think, but the music, again, it's been a minute since I've seen the movie, but I believe they still had that Prowler music behind
yeah.
them when
to, I think to guide us, our minds, in this perspective of this one story, as we were talking about, this one story that we believe to be true, where the Prowler is the villain. I think we're talking this alternate line that we haven't explored yet. We don't know it exists, just like we didn't know these other versions exist before Ethan told us.
I'm taking...
And say, like, the loser buys both plane tickets to Austin to go see that.
Sure.
I'm taking Artie Wise's side of the bet on this one.
Oh, no. Danny, what do you think? What is your expert opinion? Do you think this Miles Morales alternate 42 is good or bad?
You know, I'm wondering if they've even decided among themselves.
left it on the opening?
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I bet they have a bunch of alternate possibilities, and maybe mm-hmm. depending on what if people guess it, I think they're going to then.
True. You
know?
Yeah.
Brilliantly dodged.
That.
in the comics, the Prowler was never a real villain, right? He was well-intentioned. I think he had good reasons. I have to admit I have not thought about it, so I can't. I have no dog in this fight. I have no spider in this fight, you know.
It was a beautiful Jewish answer that both fully answered it and also let us interpret it ourselves.
Can I just rewind about 10 seconds as well? Yeah. And I mentioned the Prowler music, and in across the Spider-Verse, especially, the music was like its own character. It was so brilliant. And this is, I never pay attention to a score, but you couldn't not pay attention to the score. And like the Indian beats and the punk beats and the Miles Morales beats and the Gwen Stacy beats. And when they all came together and melded into a harmonic symphony of a team of spiders.
Yeah.
Good.
Her
God.
New band. Yeah. It was her new band's music.
Yeah. Right.
Were there any, I want to ask this guy, I know I'm sure we're getting to the point of wrapping up. Just so you know, Danny, on our podcast, we don't call them Easter eggs. We call them Afikoman. And so I want to ask, did anybody have any, like one or two Afikoman from this movie that they absolutely loved? Because there was a lot going on in the background.
I love that they had Ben Reilly as a background character. Not just Ben Reilly, but, you know, emoting.
Yeah. Overly
dramatic in the manner of a Marvel superhero. Which,
yeah.
You know, very often that, you know, that's one of the beauties of the comic book medium is that you can emote like that and it doesn't interrupt the action. You can essentially have a character. I know I shouldn't be doing this visually because, you know, you can't have a character come center stage and do a soliloquy in that same way in a movie as you can in a comic book, because you can put a lot of words in a lot of panels and if they're good words and the art is nice, you know, is dramatically done, it works. So that's, I didn't realize until I saw Ben Reilly emoting and kind of making speeches and listing his problems.
Yeah.
how much I missed that in superhero movies, which is a great thing when it's done well in superhero comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. I think my favorite Afikoman was probably the obvious one where Spider-Man 2099 goes, "Get Spider-Man!" And there's the
pointing.
The quick cut to the pointing, that famous meme and that they reproduced it in the live action most recently.
No Way Home.
What is the meme?
It's just the three Spider-Men pointing to each other from like...
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah,
this is not even Afikoman because it's right there, but it was the unexpected but delightful Donald Glover appearance.
Oh my god! Yeah, he was.
Bella tells me, my daughter tells me that he's going to be the Prowler in a live action Marvel movie.
Just take my money. I'd watch that.
Yeah, well, yeah, and of course the big Afikoman was in the first one, mm-hmm. where they have the wedding scene where he steps on the glass.
Yeah, you know,
that one. Yes,
good. I think I'm going to point out too, I really enjoy, I can't wait to go back and pause when this is streaming throughout the entire movie, but I enjoyed all of the Renaissance Vulture the scribbles around the edges of his drawing that they'd like left in from the artwork sort of thing. I thought that was, there's a lot of that like slight background writings that I'm looking forward to checking out. But then the Spider-Man that I loved the most in all of this was the paper bag one from the issue where Spider-Man's in the Baxter building and he has to escape, but he doesn't have his mm-hmm. costume. Yeah, and so he wears a Fantastic Four outfit with a paper bag over his head. And that's one of the Spider-Men chasing through the chase scene. And that was fantastic. I like that.
Great. That well, that's what I've got, y'all. This conversation was everything I hoped it would be.
That's awesome. Yeah. Danny, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for inviting me.
Do you have any shout outs or plugs you want to give before we wrap up?
I want to plug for the, of course, for the Juice Convention, the Jewish Comics Experience in New York. It's November 12th, which is a Sunday, but we will be, if you can't make it to New York, if you're a pied-à-terre in Gramercy Park is not available that weekend, we'll be doing a lot of events leading up to and leading from it online that people can see and maybe even participate in. We're lining up a lot of really cool stuff with interesting people from all different aspects. You know, if the idea of what is Jewish comics and what is a Jewish Comic Con, our definition is as broad as you would hope. So there's something for everybody, and no doubt something to piss off everybody too. otherwise, we wouldn't be doing our job.
Right.
I just add, we'll be giving out the Juicy Awards, which are awards for excellence across generations and inclusivity about to cool Jewish comics and comics creators. So those will be given out on the 11th. And I'm sure we'll find some way to, you know, get those results out to people. And then, of course, my Stan Lee biography is still around. Marvelous Life, The Amazing Story of Stan Lee. Most people seem to think it's a reasonably fair and candid assessment of Stan. Not everybody. You know, that you can tell the list of people I've blocked on Facebook are the people who don't think that, you know, who don't civilly think that. But most people think it's and I've done audiobooks of Disguised as Clark Kent, Superman on the Couch, and A Marvelous Life. So if you enjoyed this hour of hearing this, my lovely voice, imagine 14 hours of it pumped into your head. You know, what could be better? So those are, and the upcoming book, Jack Ruby, The Many Faces of Oswald's Assassin, coming up. Because I figured I wasn't getting enough aggravation writing a book about Stan Lee and the creation of the Marvel characters. So I thought I'd write a book about the Kennedy assassination, because who could possibly have a problem with that?
That's fun. Awesome. Thank you.
Can I also say, as someone who has read your books, that everyone listening to this podcast should go and purchase all of Danny Fingeroth's books. They are wonderful and insightful, and you can even use them to become a rabbi, because I used two of them in my thesis.
I was going to say, a rabbi said that, so it must be true.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Torah Smash. Our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. Our theme music was created by Sean Fogel. You can check out Sean's bands and studio work at www.thesleepywest.com. This episode was supported in part by JUICE. JUICE, which stands for the Jewish Comics Experience, is a full-day convention and preview night that brings together fans, creators, and industry professionals to explore the rich history and contributions of diverse Jewish creators and content in the comics medium. JUICE is created and hosted by the Center for Jewish History in New York City. If you are interested in attending or to learn more, visit JUICE.org. That's JEWCE.org. Also, visit the Center for Jewish History at cjh.org for new information on the institution and their partners, who are all involved in the upcoming exhibit, the Museum and Laboratory of the Jewish Comics Experience, opening in October 2023 at the Center for Jewish History. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. It helps others find us and is an excellent way to support the podcast. We want to hear from you and continue today's nerdy discussion. Go to torahsmash.com to find where to connect with us online, purchase swag from our store, support us with a donation, find previous episodes, and more. And, all right, let's do this one last time. Our names are Barack, Ethan, and RDY, and we record a podcast for Nerdy Jews. And for the last year, we've been the one and only Torah Smash. I'm pretty sure you know the rest.
Can you just turn off the AC?
I would love to turn off the AC. I'm actually quite chilly, but I would like to stay married also.
Yeah. Enough said.
Yeah. I'll see you at JUICE.
Yeah. See you there.